You make a mistake, you get walked into a room by your best friend, you don't walk out again. I just outlived everybody, because everybody I know is either dead or in prison for the rest of their lives. Everybody.
Takes you on a tailspin of terrible life. We all have past, but you can do something to present and future.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Millennials Choice Show. I am your host, Matthew Ablican, and I'm here with my brother from the same mother, Danny Ablican, my co-host.
What's going on, Danny? What's going on?
Guys, we have, I always talk about it and I say we got a special episode and special guest in the house and all that stuff. And yes, it's true. All of our guests have been really, really special. But today we got something very special for you guys. I'm very excited about it. I know you're excited
about it. I'm pumped.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about all kinds of things today, and we're going to take you down this journey. And I just want to welcome to the show, John Elite. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for coming on. And for those of you guys who don't know, you know, John has had a very interesting life, a life we typically would watch on the big screen, right, John? And it's been one of those things where, you know, you've had ups and downs and it's been a roller coaster for you. And we are super excited and interested to learn more about you, you know, kind of learn a little bit about the past and the upbringing and things like that, but also learn about how you're making an impact in your community and using your platform to do good for others. So we want to get right into it. We want to learn more about, you know, your upbringing, your childhood. What was it like growing up in your household, but also in the area that you were growing up in New York?
Well, at first I want to start off because you guys are in Canada and I have some really close friends there. Lee Whitley, I want to say hello to him. He's doing great work in trying to help people with cancer. And my friend Italo Magnifico, we spoke yesterday, and these are real good friends of mine. And one of my partners here in Florida is from there, Marco Zoni. So I got a lot of connection with you guys in that area, you know, in different areas, different countries, but especially where you guys are at, I have some very close friends. But, to get back to your question, I grew up in a very unique area of gangsters. I grew up where everybody around me were involved with the mafia. They were very active guys in different families. And my father was born and raised in Albania, but came to New York City, where he was partners and got involved with Lucky Luciano's first cousin, Blackie, who was a made guy with us, the Gambino family, and the same area, Vito Genovese. So I've been exposed as a baby to that life.
Yeah. And, you know, I was listening to an interview where your father kind of, he always wanted you to be able to defend yourselves. So what was that like? I know you were always in the gym boxing. I mean, you know, it may not look like it, but Danny and I did some kickboxing for a year and
long time ago.
And, you know, he beats me up every single time. But what was that like? Like, you know, growing up in kind of that authoritarian like household?
You know, my father forced us all since there's pictures of me and my brother, 3 years old. My brother was four when we started training. People thought that was insane, but we came from, my father was from Albania, we're Albanian, and we come from a unique background of a suppression since the Ottoman days. I've said this over in other interviews, it became a communist country. So he wanted us to respect the sport and be able to defend ourselves and be gentlemen at the same time. So, you know, I'm a big advocate of these gyms, whether they're UFC, MMA, boxing gyms, wrestling, because you have a unique understanding of respect of when you're fighting in the streets to the ring, and you develop not into being bullies, but being into gentlemen that can handle themselves is a difference than punk kids that think they're tough guys when four or five or seven or eight guys jump a guy or sucker punch a guy. And these are insecure, weak guys. And, you know, I'm against that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, I mean, Danny can take all five or six by himself, but, you know, most people wouldn't be able to do that. But that's something I want to put my kids
Danny,
in.
Danny, maybe you can start hanging out with me more because, you know, as I'm getting older, when these guys try to jump me.
John, I got you, man. I'm your security. I'll be your bodyguard.
So, I mean, everybody, you know, likes to talk about the mafia and things like that. So like at what age when you were, you know, going through this, your life of yours, you're growing up, you're being raised. And at what point did you start mixing in with the mafia?
Very young ages. I mean, you know, everybody around me was one of the original bosses in our neighbor was Andy Ruggiano. They called him Fat Andy Ruggiano. He was the maid guy with Albert Anastasia and Murder, Inc. in 1954. He was kind of a grandfather figure to me. His sons were constantly with me. They were a little older than me. We were in the boxing gyms together. They were my baseball coaches. So I was raised mostly around that family. You don't hear that name too much because he went to prison as I got into my teens. So I've been around that family since I'm a kid. I've been around some other serious gangsters from other crews, also the Lucchese family. My little girlfriend's father and uncle were made guys with them. So my exposure was very, very early in age, and I started committing crimes, I guess, in my early teens.
And when you kind of like, you know, we have this thing about like when we watch the mafia on the movies or on TV and things like that, you know, there's this fascination with it. When you were living it or getting introduced to it, was there that like fascination, or was it kind of just like, you know, you wanted just to make money? Like, what was the motivation at first?
The motivation is money always. You know, money is the root to everything, whether it's they say in the Bible, the root to all evil, or, you know, the greed and the, you know, some people, you guys are successful guys in the real estate business, but you're doing it the right way, right? The problem in our neighborhood is we were taught to do it the wrong way. We were aggressive to get to our goal was to become wealthy, which we all did become wealthy, most of us, the guys in my crew. But we did it the wrong way. We did it through murder, through robberies, through aggression, instead of using our intelligence and going up the ladder the proper way. And that's really what I try to teach the younger guys now is there's a price to pay with the way I did it. And that's with jail time. That's with being shot up, stabbed up, being bad at yourself, and the emotional pain and the emotional consequences of your actions, where for the rest of your life, I got to live with some of the actions I took, taking people's lives and hurting people. And when people think there is no consequence, there is. If you got any kind of heart, there's a consequence to it. And I got to live with that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a very interesting Bible verse in the book of Galatians where it talks about, you know, do not be fooled. God is not mocked, and you do reap what you sow. And so it's interesting that you say that, because, yeah, the love of money is the root of all evil. And I think we get caught up in the Hollywood and the glamour and the lights when we're watching it. But that's not, most of the time, that's not really like how it is when you're actually living it, correct?
No, you know, people watch the movie Goodfellas and, you know, Jimmy Burke, the movie's about, and his son was one of my best friends, stayed with me. I'm the one that brought the word to the family when he got killed in Brooklyn. I went to identify the body at the morgue with his sister, Kathy. And, you know, I worked and I did some work for his father, who's dead now, Jimmy Burke, when he was in prison. Me and his son killed two guys for him. So these are movies for other people. For us, it's reality of our life, right? That's our neighborhood. Those movies are made off of, you know, guys like ourselves. And, you know, is the movie depicted accurately against Jimmy Burke? I don't think so exactly, but the violence is, and you know, what we did was, but it's just not a good life, and not conducive to having a good future. It's a future with pain and suffering along with the money, but there's a consequence to the money. It's just not worth it. You know, I try to tell kids that every day. The way you're gonna live your life in that lifestyle is through murder and through jail time and through losing family members to that life and treachery, deceit, dishonor, not honor. And you're going to be betrayed like I was betrayed by my family and by the mafia. And, you know, they'll spin that in the media and nonsense. But I tell people, look at the timelines, and you'll see while I was sitting in those penitentiaries in Brazil what these guys were doing to me. They were all meeting government and ratting. And honestly, I'm not surprised by it now that I'm out of that life. When you step back, people want to individually survive, right? They're never going to take their lives and put it secondary to yours. So, you know, it's naive to believe that someone's going to do that.
Right. Yeah, that's very tough. And I feel that if most people knew that at the very beginning, they may not have joined the mob, correct?
You know, I don't know if you guys are aware of it, but yesterday I did an interview. Somebody contacted me from the White House, an independent news journalist, and he was going to write the article about my involvement and relationship over at Mar-a-Lago and pictures I've taken with Donald Trump and different people. And, you know, people asked me, you know, they wrote in the article, they insinuated about the mafia and my past and Donald Trump. Basically what they're saying is he had knowledge of mob guys and he was involved. And, you know, and I understand the journalist is to try to do his job and he's going to write. Obviously, he's trying to write against the president. I have a lot of respect for the president because he's kind of reminds me, to me, he's a hero for this country, for America. He's a pro-America, pro-veterans, pro-police. And I'm an ex-gangster that says that. And I walked away from that life 15 years ago. I was betrayed by my family. Our president was betrayed by the government. And so I can relate to him. And what I said was, I don't know how much Donald Trump knows about me or not, but I'm the guy that advocates against fentanyl, against the drugs, against the cartels, against the mafia. I'm a guy that lived that life on the street, whether you want to consider it the mafia, the wars on the street. And for 15 years, Loretta Lynch, that was the attorney general under Obama, wrote a letter talking about me saving a guard's life in prison who was a veteran. And I'm pro-veteran. So, you know, that was the first time I stepped out of the street world and tried to save somebody in a legitimate world who was a war hero, actually. So when they write these articles, I don't understand it because I'm a celebrity figure, I guess, at this point. I'm on Netflix. I was on 2020, on Showtime, on 60 Minutes. I'm in magazines. I was a centerfold for GQ. So Donald Trump's not taking pictures next to a gangster. He's taking pictures next to a guy that works with children, does talks around the world, talks and educates people against the street. And I educate them to follow guys like President Trump, who's, to me, is a hero. I mean, there's a guy that's out there trying to save lives and change his country for the better. So when they attack like that, I guess, you know, I understand they're trying to do a job because they're looking on the other side of the forum. I guess he's writing for the left side, the left-wing Democratic Party. So, you know, it's part of the life. They're going to shoot bullets at you. They're going to shoot words at you. And you just got to be a gentleman and handle it.
That's it's very interesting, the state of the world is in right now, because everybody's pointing out the speck that's in their brother's eye, but they're not looking at the log that's in their own eyes. And, you know, everybody points the finger, shifts the blame, very little accountability. And it's very interesting to see what happens, especially in 2024 when he runs again. So I know in Canada, we like to watch Trump. So we'll see what happens. having said that, you mentioned Netflix, and I did watch that. Fear. You're referring to Fear City?
Fear City. I have another Netflix special coming out in 2024, January. Hopefully right before Trump wins his next election and becomes a president and makes America great again. You know, so I've done so much TV now at this point. I hate to use the word I'm a celebrity. I'm no different than anyone else. And one of the things I said about the president taking pictures, he's such a humble individual and so is his family. So when people behave the way he does and he is who he is, he could be like a lot of people when they're full of themselves, and he's not. He's very genuine. His family's very genuine. So when people ask me, why do you like this guy so much? I says, because the guy is just, he's looking out for the people. It's not about himself. He says it over and over again. I'm the president for the people that have power. I really have a lot of disdain for Trudeau and your country. And I had a lot of respect for the truckers and people that are for individual rights, freedoms. And that's what this, you know, all our countries were all raised and born to believe in that, and our forefathers, and they fought for this. So when guys are leaning towards communism and forced actions of people, people can't be weak. They have to be strong like President Trump and fight back when people are attacking him. It's easy for him to just step aside and give up the fight because he's a billionaire, right? He's a famous guy. He doesn't need the money. Why does he do it? Maybe he does it because, and I believe this, that God put him there to expose the corruption in all our governments and what's going on. And somebody's got to stand up to it. So it's one individual at a time. And it's like your truck is in Canada. It was one individual at a time. And without having men that are going to sacrifice themselves, we will go down, all of us. And there'll be no future for you guys, your kids, and your grandkids. So it's up to all of us to be man enough to understand our life is not what the picture's about, like Donald Trump does. It's about the other lives and the other lives and future generations. So it's, to me, it's very important to behave and stand up against tyranny and communism and, you know, suppression.
Definitely.
Our parents left their country in the 80s and met here in Canada because of that exact reason. So, I mean, 40 years later, it seems like the world's going backwards. But yeah, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. And so in Fear City, I saw clips of Francis. Michael Francis was on that as well. He was featured on that as well. Did you guys have any run-ins together? Well, did you guys have any run-ins together in the former life at all? I know you guys were part of two different families, but how did that go?
No, you know, I know of Michael. I met him a couple of times. He doesn't remember. I was younger, I guess, then. But I knew his brother, Johnny. I knew his father. I met with his father several times. He was involved with a family, Colombo family, obviously. I knew a ton of soldiers in his family. Once here and there, we've had differences over social media and things, but we like each other, respect each other, and we went way past that. We talked to each other once in a while. He's a gentleman, and we definitely respect each other. And listen, in life, you're not going to agree on everything, and we didn't. But we do now, I believe, and we get along pretty well. And that's just life. I mean, you know, no one's going to be exactly perfect with each other, but we'll respect each other, and I definitely like him. Recently, you guys know my daughter passed away, and Michael was very supportive, got in touch with me a lot, called me often and gave me his condolences and was there for me when I needed to talk to somebody about losing a daughter and God and religion and faith. And so I respect him for that, and I won't forget that either.
You see, it's funny because I look at some of these YouTube guys, and John, we kind of spoke a little bit earlier that people clip up and do what they want to do to kind of get clicks and go viral and all that. And see, they don't want to share this stuff. They want to make it seem like, you know, this person has drama or beef with this person. And it's like, no, like, you just heard it here first. The guy was there for this guy, for John. And when he went through a hardship, and that's what this is all about. That's as human beings, what it's all about. And nobody wants to talk about that. Everybody wants to say, oh, this person has drama with this person.
It's all about the drama.
It's all about the clicks and YouTube. And I'm very happy to hear that. Is there any chance, I have to ask this, is there any chance that you guys are going to be working on some sort of project together in the future?
Yeah. I mean, we'd definitely be open with it. Me and him, we've talked about different things that we might do together and other projects where people called us and asked to do others. We did several projects together, actually, me and Michael. We did the Mafia 1 and 2 in the UK with Trevor McDonald, famous journalist. One of the greatest gentlemen I've met was they knighted him, and I, Sir Trevor McDonald. I have pictures with me and Trevor together in my house that are up that he sent me as a gift. And me and Michael also did Fear City together. We might not have filmed at the same time, but we're involved in the same projects. And we've spoken several times. We've done things with Patrick David, with Value Entertainment, who's another gentleman, actually, very successful in his field. So we've done things and we've discussed other projects that we might do together. So, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he's a gentleman. He's well-spoken. He's intelligent. So, you know, those are the things that you look for a human being. You know, it's easy to hate people, dislike people, talk against people. And, you know, people like to do that. And, you know, we're men, we're adults, we're not children. So, you know, we can be honest with each other and, you know, you can disagree to agree, you know, on some things too. So, but hopefully, yeah, we do something together in the future.
So happy to hear that. So happy to hear that. What did you think of, you served in the Gambino family, you're an affiliate of the Gambino family. So, what did you think of the movie with John Travolta, the Gotti movie? Accurate, not accurate?
I thought it was horrible, honestly. I didn't watch it all. I watched pieces of it. The original Gotti movie with Amar Asante, I thought was fantastic. When that movie came out, I actually was the cellmate of Jeannie Gotti in prison. Later on, we didn't get along over Joe Gambino, who was, to me, was a very gentleman, quiet. I liked Joe a lot. But Amar Asante, his nephews grew up with us. Charlie used to work with me, passed away. His other nephew, Mark, is very, very, he's best friends with my brother-in-law. Gentlemen, Amon's a gentleman. They're from our neighborhood, Ozone Park. Amon's mother was from there. So, you know, these guys are all characters to other people with us. They, you know, personalized friends and family. So it's, you know, a different situation with us. And he understood the life of Amar Asante. To me, he's a great actor. He never made it, to the level he should have. I mean, he did some good scenes. He played Julius Caesar. He played a lot of roles, but one in particular he was very good at. In the Gotti movie, I thought he was fantastic. And the Travolta one, I think Travolta is a great actor. I just think it was done horribly. And I think they should have let the producers and directors, the kid from Entourage, he's a nice guy, he's intelligent. He's the one that ran that project, but they didn't give him much say. So he took the fall for it, but I don't believe it was his fault.
So because you were like around all these guys, like, can you tell us what John Gotti was actually like? I mean, we see bits and clips and he really kind of brought light to the mafia in from the mafia's perspective in a negative way, because it's supposed to be very low key and not so, you know, in the public eye. But what was John Gotti really like from your perspective?
You know, for the people that don't know, you know, there's people that, you know, talk nonsense on social media and the media. And, you know, I put some clips out of me picking him up, John Gotti Sr. from court in Manhattan, where we get pulled over. I put some clips out at the Ravenite for the people who said I was never at the Ravenite. I put clips out of me escorting his family out of the house. I put some videos and pictures out from the Helmsley Palace when I'm at the weddings and the wedding parties of his kids. So, you know, for the people, so they understand the accuracy of my knowledge. John Gotti was like a father figure to me. You know, I was raised around when he first started as a made guy in the Gambino family in the late 70s. And I was around, I started coming around in the early 80s with him. Before that, I was around the Ruggianos until Andy went to jail. And when Gotti went away, I was with him for the whole ride. So for the people who want to know who he is, I slept in that house. He was a great guy to go out with. I tell everybody, as a human being, you go drinking with the father. He was fun. He laughed. He liked to party around to different swanky clubs. He definitely had a great charisma about him. He treated us great, but he, when it came to business, he was very serious. He was hard and he wanted things his way. And everybody has faults, right? So, you know, was he loud in certain ways and egotistical? I guess, because, you know, he wasn't an old fashioned gangster where he was quiet. He did thumb his nose out at the law enforcement and different people. He demanded respect. He got respect. So anybody that says anything different, you could call him anything you want, but he knew how to manage and maneuver guys left and right. And there was nobody that was going to maneuver him. He was intelligent that way. I love the guy. I put my life out for the guy. I didn't have the same feeling for his son, to be honest with you. And I'm not here to bash his son either. You know, it's just the reality of the life. I was told to protect his son by him. And, you know, that's what I did. But the father, I had a lot of respect for. So, you know, I like the father a lot. So, you know, people that want to badmouth, they don't really know him. They don't know anything about him. He had faults like any human being. Nobody's perfect.
How was he different from his son, John Gotti Jr.? Personality-wise, how were they different?
The father was very secure with himself. He grew up in my same neighborhood I grew up in. He went to the same high school as I went to. He didn't grow up with anything, any food, any clothes like I did. He used Kennedy Airport as a piggy bank like I did. Those were the areas where we all made money. We hijacked trucks. A lot of them were giveaways, actually. Give me ups. We controlled the dock. So we used to give them the fake manuscripts and we'd pick up. They load for us, not knowing we would just show up an hour and a half earlier, give them manuscripts that we had and they would fill our trucks up for us. So, you know, I can relate to him. I was a bookmaking partner with him and his partner, Willie Boy Johnson. So he had a hard life. The son, on the other hand, went to LaSalle military school, very rich private military school the father put him in. He grew up in a rich neighborhood in Howard Beach. He didn't struggle like we did. He wasn't hardcore. I mean, that's okay. But he didn't fit in. You know, he was trying to mimic his father's life and he wasn't close to him. And I don't like that everybody blames the father for bringing the son around. That's not true. I tell everybody the accuracy of that. The father did not want him nowhere near there. That's why he put him in military school. The kid started getting into trouble on the streets. He started coming up to our neighborhood. He was doing dumb things. And the father wanted to make sure he didn't lose his life, like he lost his younger son as a child on an accident. A mini bike accident was a terrible thing. The father would never get over that, just like I'll never get over losing my daughter. Or any parent loses a child, they know what it is. So he was trying to protect his son, and the only way to protect him was to keep him next to him after a while because the kid was running amok. So, you know, John wasn't his father. He wasn't raising him. It was not necessary to be your father. You could love your father, but you can't blame your father. I was there during this. His father just did what he thought was best to protect him.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and I actually heard you on another podcast, YouTube channel, where you said you're happy to make an amends with John Gotti Jr. if he's willing to come to the table as well.
Well, you got to understand people are insecure. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to admit the truth, you know, and the truth is I was sitting in a Brazilian penitentiary protecting him and guys, whether I liked them or didn't like them, I was protecting them. I went on the run. I left my family. I lost millions of dollars, tons of money, houses. I lost my life protecting them, and they all sat with the government. They're making excuses, but there is no excuse. Everybody understands in our world, you sit down with the government, you're considered a rat. So it wasn't just him. It was all his captains, his right-hand man, Scars. They were all captains that were, you know, giving information against me, meeting with the government, betraying me, betraying the oaths, betraying the mafia. The Bonanno family, the boss was wearing a wire and all them. So this is while I'm sitting in a penitentiary. I didn't betray anybody. I fired back years later after they all betrayed me and betrayed their oath. I'm Albanian. I didn't even take an oath and I believed in it. So, you know, I know their insecurity. I tell everybody, just check the timeline where I was. And any nonsense about, well, maybe I was a cooperator, you know, prior to that is also nonsense. There's no reason to leave the country if you're cooperating. There's no reason to sit in a penitentiary for 3 years if you're cooperating. There's no reason to spend millions of dollars if you're cooperating. And if you are cooperating, the first thing that comes out when you take a stand is that you've been an informant and a cooperator. Legally, they have to, you know, expose that. So these are all ridiculous things. And Gotti Sr.'s lawyer, Richie Raybock, was my lawyer. So, you know, I was very transparent. I used mob lawyers and nonsense. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point, but history's got to tell itself truthful. Not, you know, a spin on, you know, the accuracy of some of these statements they make. Well, nobody got indicted because of my statements. That's not true either. When a guy walks into a federal government and he knows information, There's tons of guys running in and taking plea deals so they don't get hammered with life sentence or death penalties or everything else. And there's a million investigations that are opened up because of those conversations with the government that directly or indirectly, you're going to catch cases like we all did. So, you know, I'm very laid back with what I do because that's my past life. But, you know, they're not going to push that on me. None of these families are going to. And for the mobsters that are accurate, you know, still out there, I don't have a lot of respect for because they live that life. But if they really believe in that life, then come kill guys like me that you say that about or other guys and then get busy. You guys just say you're gangsters. You know, this ain't the era where I lived in. We were shooting and killing and doing different things. So, you know, they should just continue on their own path and keep my name out of their mouth.
And I think the importance of what it is that you're saying is to say, let's not, people who live that life, let's not try to project now that life at this point in time to negatively impact the youth because we went through that life and we know what's at the end of it. And I think that's the importance of what you're trying to say here. Let's not do that. Let's not go that route. Let's not talk about that or be about that life anymore. Or let's not try to play games. Let's really just say the truth of it all. And I think that's the message you want to get across, well, right?
You know, when you got guys on social media, you know, glamorizing that world, I don't glamorize it. I know what it is. I know it's nonsense. It's garbage. There's no loyalty. So I try to tell this to the kids so they don't fall into that same trap I did. But if they didn't believe in that life, Joe Messina wore a wire. You guys in Canada know that he was involved with the Canada when they did it. You know, obviously, he did a hit for, they killed three captains here, Bonanno family. Joe Messina was involved in that. So why isn't anybody killing Joe Messina? Go find him. You know, Leonetti, you've had a Philadelphia. Go find him, kill him. Find Ralph Natale, kill him. Go find John Jr., kill him. Sammy Gravano, kill him. So, you know, when these guys are talking, they just discard anybody that's jammed up or goes to jail and you're useless after you go to prison. None of these guys are helping anybody. They don't believe in what they say. They only believe in their money. And they believe in, you know, you're good as your last dollar. And when you're useless, you're useless to them. So that's the reality of the life. You know, I'm just being honest. And, you know, obviously gangsters don't want to be honest. And, you know, at the time when I was in penitentiary in Brazil, they should have been killing guys, the other crews, should have been killing guys that were cooperating, right? That's our laws. That's what we swear by. But they don't do that. So, you know, when they talk in this nonsense and they're almost embarrassing the way they're on these internets and typing away on the fake names, that's not a gentleman that does that or a man that does that. It's kind of laughable.
So it's you brought up Sammy the Bull and I heard something on Patrick's show, Valuetainment's show, where they asked him about you and he said that, you know, when he first came out of prison, you were there to kind of provide him just a little bit of financial support. I don't even want to call it that, but you gave him some money and all that stuff. So first of all, is there truth to that? And second of all, you know, then I saw some stuff online where there was some back and forth and all that. Where do you guys stand today?
I don't have any respect for Sammy for a lot of reasons. One, because I helped him and he bit my hand after I helped him. He got his lawyer, Doug Anton, Lebanese attorney, was a friend of mine. I gave it to him. He worked on Sammy's cases when he was in jail. I gave him to his daughter, who I like his daughter. And I gave him money when he asked. I introduced him to people. Actually, Patrick David, when I was doing the interview with him, asked me for Sammy's number also. So I even started Sammy in the podcast business. I helped Sammy with connections. He met me at Newark Airport with a very famous gangster who was a friend of mine that doesn't come out publicly and in this genre. He's a gentleman. We're best friends still. And so Sammy met us and he brought six armed security to even meet us. So everything he says is a complete lie. And, you know, and I don't got respect for him because he doesn't help kids. He tries to romance this life that he's a gangster forever. He doesn't believe that. That's why he ratted. That's why he didn't try to kill John Gotti. Instead, he chose a different route, which is okay. But then don't bullshit if that's what you're going to do. And then you're not in the state. You're hiding somewhere else. You're telling stories that aren't accurate or true. You were underboss for 5 minutes. You didn't set up the murder of Paul Castellano. People don't know all this. He only sat in that position because Frankie DiCicco was killed. He was close to Frankie DiCicco. He was only a made guy at the time. He wasn't a skipper. They elevated him after that hit the skipper because of his relationship with Frankie DiCicco. When Frankie gets killed, John needs a Kamala Harris to a Joe Biden, and he uses Sammy because he knew that Sammy was in no man's land. He had to stay loyal to him because they just was involved in the Paul Castellano hit. Even though he didn't do anything, he was down the block in a car with John, but you know, he had knowledge of it. So John knew he could control him. Now he couldn't go back to the other faction of the family. He knew he was in trouble with other families. So he had a grip on Sammy and they elevated him to captain. For 5 minutes, he was underboss, and he's not a killer and good at it like he claims. He shot one guy under his own testimony. So, you know, these are the things that they're bullshitting kids about. And when I asked him to help me talk to kids, he turned it down and he said, fuck them. You know, if they're too stupid to see what goes on, then, Leo, you know, that's his answer to me. And I got no respect for that. I gave him a chance at a second life. Actually, was a third, because when he fucked up the first time, he started selling ecstasy and went to jail for 15 years. So he had his chances, and the guy blows him, and he's not honest. And I'm not going to do what Michael Francis did, sit across from him and yell and argue, but I don't be open to sit across from him anytime and discuss Cosa Nostra if he wants. And he's another guy that never been to Europe. I'm there every year, a couple times a year. He doesn't even understand what I understand about the European mentality. And he won't travel out of the country because he knows in Europe they'll kill him. So here he's safe in Arizona. It's a different era now. So, you know, and again, I don't even want to badmouth the guy, but it's hard to, you know, you're an 80-year-old man that you have an obligation to help kids and you choose not to. So I don't respect you. I don't care what you think you used to do or that ego, you know, is let you talk like that. You're not that gangster like you're trying to behave like, and, you know, you talk bad about Gas Pipe because Gas Pipe is dead. You're petrified of him. These guys are on a different level of murder, and Gas Pipe was a very active guy personally. He was doing the work, I know, besides sending guys. And, you know, they get away with it because they use that title and people buy into anything they say is true, which is ridiculous because nobody asks specifics. And I always say, if you want to interview somebody like that or me, ask specifics. And if he was that killer, ask where he was, how did he do, where was he standing when it happened, who was the shooter, where'd you get the guns, where'd you drop the guns, how'd you do it, you know, ask. Not just say, oh, I killed 19 people. We did the Today Show, me and him, and he's showing records of Paul Castellano, like he's an Elvis Presley gold record. It's nothing to be proud of, first off. Second, you didn't do it. You weren't the shooter. You weren't even involved. You were a couple blocks away. And he gives a ridiculous story that they passed the body after they killed him. He didn't go past that body. I'll take you down by Sparks. I'll show you how thin those streets are, especially during the holidays. These are all not true stories. He's just a storyteller. You know, maybe he's a good storyteller, but whatever. But these aren't accurate accounts of what happened and not accurate accounts of John Gotti either. So he can make up anything he wants. Nobody's questioning him.
Is that another guy similar to John Gotti Jr. that if he wanted to come to the table and just said, let's put this behind us, let's move on, let's do something positive, would you still consider it? If he's listening to this, what would you say to him?
Yeah, I've asked him, listen, you know, to me, it's the past, and everybody knows that I moved on in different areas of positive living. I'm a different guy. You know, I think it's their egos that they just can't admit the truth. I mean, the truth's the truth. They understand, you know, what they did. They know, you know, exactly what happened. I don't know what to say to these guys past, like, you know, if you want, I made it very simple. This is not a knock against John Jr. and Sammy, but your father died. The guy that put your father in prison was Sammy Gravano. Your father died a bad death. He got beat up in jail by a Philadelphia bank robber called Johnson. Now, John Gotti, if you believe in this life, Jr., why didn't you go kill Johnson? No, not as a gangster, as a son to a father. Why didn't you go hunt down Sammy Gravano and butcher him? Right? But you didn't do it. So don't believe that you really believe in this life. You don't. You know you don't believe in this life, and that's okay. But stop telling these phony, fake stories. And the same with Sammy. And anybody that knows me, truly knows me, if that was my father, I don't care what I had to do, Sammy Gravano would have been in pieces. And not because my father was a gangster, because he wasn't, but that's my father. So no one's ever going to do anything to anybody in my family without me really torturing them and killing them and hurting them. Now, that was my life back then. I lived by it. That's not my life anymore. And it's okay for me to say that's not my life anymore. It's okay for them to say it. But when they're not saying that, and they're telling kids basically to do what they used to do, even though they didn't do it. So they're letting people believe they were the ones doing this stuff. But I gave you you can't give a better example than what I gave. You have one gentleman that's hiding somewhere else because he's from Brooklyn. So if you really believed in that life, you'd be here. And I got another guy that swears by that life and wants to tell you he's the ultimate gangster, and he didn't kill the guy that tortured his father to death. So what would he do for you or me or any other kid if he doesn't protect his own father? This is, and I would sit with John again to answer your question. You know, I was with that family day and night. I slept at his house day and night. I don't got nothing against him. It's just that the fact is that they turned this whole storyline around. And of course I can't allow that because it's not true. And it's, you know, the accuracy is not my word or his. Just get the timeline. I'm sitting in a penitentiary when these guys are betraying me.
Right. So you did mention Paul Castellano. I have heard you mention that, you know, he was Carlo Gambino's brother-in-law and that he was an earner, made lots of money. You know, maybe his downfall was he didn't take care of enough people around him and make them wealthy. But you had a lot of respect for him as the boss of the family. So can you tell us a little bit about Paul Castellano? Like, there's not that much information out on him besides we know the famous murder. But can you tell us a little bit about him as a boss, as an earner and all that?
Listen, you know, money's power in any country, in any area, any neighborhood. And Paul Castellano made billions personally and billions for not just for the Gambino family. And that's why he was well liked and loved and had good relationships with, you know, Gigante, whose daughter is a friend of mine, Rita, who's, you know, by the way, hello. And she's a good woman. And, you know, this guy was a businessman. He knew how to make relationships with other families and to make them wealthy. And as long as guys are making money, it's like anything else. It's just very simple, you know, mathematical, you know, deduction from this. You know, when you say to somebody, me and you are making money and me and you are making a million each a year. And if somebody hurts you, that I lose that million. Maybe I don't like you personally, but I respect you and like you because you're making me wealthy and rich. The same thing with Paul Castellano. So obviously the Lucchese family and Genovese family had a relationship with Paul Castellano because of the money they're making with him. And Paul understood that and made them rich. And that's what made him such a powerful boss, because you go across the aisle and you make relationships with other families. It's not like people think, you know, all these guys from Colombo family, Lucchese family, we all grew up together. Some of us went one way, but we're all friends. We go drinking together. We go eating together. But we may kill each other, too, if we cross each other financially. And we kill each other in our own family, too, for the same reasons. But the idea is to make money and stay powerful. And when a group of guys like John did, and I understand why John did it, but and without getting into long stories, but once John does that, he just destroyed the relationship with Genovese family and Lucchese family. And John was, you know, if you're ready to take that on, okay. But if you're not ready to take that on, you just killed billions of dollars and you brought a family's net worth down from billions to, you know, maybe a quarter of a billion. You killed the earning capacity of a family. And Paul was not only a businessman, but he actually had more guys killed than John Gotti did. So he was a killer, just not by his own hand. And he was intelligent enough to have guys like Roy DeMeo around. The Gemini Lounge, for people that don't know, with Tester and Senta, Anthony Senta and Nino Gaggi. those were a crew that was run by Paul Castellano. And the Westies, also the Irish crew, were also controlled by Paul Castellano. So he did know to keep guys around. And when people say, well, the Westies, by the way, were Irish. So you don't have to be Italian to be a gangster. It's not true what people are talking about. There's plenty of guys just like me and Joe Watts and the Westies. And I can go on with those named Jewish characters over the years, like Lepke and Bugsy Siegel, and go on and on and on. That, you know, these guys were, people want two things in that world. They want intelligence with earning capacity and violence. And if you are one or other, the other or both, you're an asset to the mafia. And that's what that world's about.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a, it kind of, it reminds me of like traditional business without the violence, but traditional business. I mean, you know, as soon as you stop earning for somebody, you know, then you kind of really see their true colors and what they actually think of you. I've kind of gone through that in my career too, but in any case, someone who's really popular on the internet more recently is Andrew Tate. And Andrew Tate has a message that he claims for the youth, and specifically for young men who, you know, he has his messages, and whether people agree with it or not, he's made a lot of noise on the internet. And I think he's going through some things now at this point in time, but he's made a lot of noise on the internet. But what are you, like, have you listened in on any of his stuff? Like, what do you think about him, or do you even know who he is?
I want to show you something. See the shirt? Can you see the back of it?
Yes. Avuch London.
So this is a young guy from the UK who's a positive guy. And I told him I would wear the shirt from because of, you know, his positive attitude and you know, his idea of helping youth and doing things the right way. And so these are the things, and the reason why I turned around now at this point is because Andrew Tate is one of those guys, right? He's healthy. He doesn't need to go do what he's doing. He doesn't need all these headaches. He doesn't need to get locked up. But somebody has to take a stand and talk and risk their own life, just like President Trump does, and risk it. You know, they could go around quietly and be wealthy and have a great life. They don't need to jump into this arena. But when these guys are jumping in this arena and they're trying to make a difference, not for themselves because they're already financially sound, they're making a difference to give people the ability to come and have the strength off their backs and also speak out, because a lot of guys need groups to become and do something like the mafia. Individually, they're not tough, right? But they want to act like they're tough when five and six guys jump one guy. And I said it earlier, that's cowards, that's weakness. But when you could be a Donald Trump and go against the government, and you could be an Andrew Tate and go against the government, now you're a man. You're a man because you have the nerve and the balls to go out and be outspoken against, you know what's wrong. In your heart, you believe in something that is wrong, and you're coming out and you're risking your own life and your own family's safety and the comforts of your life to be able to come out and speak and give other guys the incentive to man up and also speak out. And one man at a time changes things. So you need to get people to step forward. And, you know, I do it with the mafia. I call myself the Donald Trump of the mob world because I expose it, just like Donald Trump exposed the government. The government betrayed him. He didn't betray the government. The mafia betrayed me. I didn't betray the mafia. And, you know, just look at history. And in history over, you know, maybe not 10 years from now, 100 years, they're going to look into it and they're going to say, hey, this guy's being truthful. Donald Trump's going to say same thing. He was truthful. He doesn't gain anything by saying what's going on internationally with our money. Why are we in the WHO when we're paying and nobody else is? And why is it controlled by China? Why is what went on? There was wars. Every administration has a war, but Donald Trump didn't. You know, these are factual, you know, things that he's saying, statements. President Biden just made a speech with the Mexican president. He didn't even mention fentanyl. So when you get guys like Andrew Tate and Trump, and they have the, you know, they have the courage to go out there and speak, it gives me and incentivizes guys like me to do the same and say, you know what, I'm going to have the courage. It's not easy because everybody's attacking you, you know, and, you know, so, but if you're man enough and you got big shoulders, you can accept the attacks, be intelligent and bring across the truth. And then you got guys like you guys, right? I'm on this show and I don't take a lot of shows from a lot of people that contact us. I took it for a reason. You know, when I hear the history of you guys, you're hardworking, you're young guys, you're intelligent. I got a lot of respect for you. And I see in you certain things that I got respect for. And those things are on Andrew Tate also. And you have an obligation to keep doing what you're doing as gentlemen, right? And helping the kids, because every time someone looks up to somebody else, there's kids that maybe won't relate to me, they'll relate to you guys. I says, and if you do the right thing, it's just one more life that we save and we put in the right direction. It's important. So whoever raised you guys did a good job. And, you know, people are going to hate on you, and you're always going to get hated. You're not going to get everybody that likes you. They're going to talk nonsense about you. And, you know, you got to just understand there's jealousy and there's envious, and there's people in this world that are always wishing bad instead of putting a hand out and trying to help the next. And just recently, I have a friend in the UFC, Phil Baroni, badass in New York, they used to call him, very exciting fighter. And you get these weak guys talking nonsense because they're jealous of him. They were afraid to get in a ring with him. Some guy, Jesse Fire, talking nonsense about him, doesn't have any accuracy at all. He's on the internet talking against the guy. I'm intimately involved in the case. I know exactly what's accurate. I know that there's corruption like crazy in Mexico. There's on the border right now, there's a war going on with the cartels. I know the corruption with the FBI head there is Garcia Luna, who's on trial here for corruption and murder and drug dealing with the cartels. And these guys are on the internet talking against Phil Baroni like they understand the structure of Mexico, like they were involved in Mexico and they know, you know, there's killings left and right there. And there's such corruption what's going on, but that yet these guys are on the internet to badmouth a guy out of jealousy. Not out of accuracy, out of jealousy. They don't talk to his ex-wife for 14 years, Angela, who stands by him. So they only talk to fly-by-night girls that are talking against him. So yeah, I'm gonna speak up for the guy. I raised him, he was in my house since he's a child, and he's not a killer. His father was a killer, corrupt cop that worked with me, Phil Barone. And the father was deserted his son his whole life, and he deserted his own mother his whole life. So, you know, I want the accuracy to go out. It's easy to hate on a guy because he's in a bad situation. And if he did it, then he's gonna have to pay the price for it. But what happened to innocent before proven guilty? And there's so many things that with that case that these guys don't know yet. They're on the YouTube chirping away with inaccuracies out of jealousy and out of insecurity because they were too scared to get in a ring with the guy.
100%.
100%. And we're definitely
obligations, like I said, to do the right thing.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to show that clip of what you said about somebody raised us right because to our parents, because they're gonna like that as well. So I appreciate that. And
definitely, yeah. I just wanted to ask real quick, John, if you had a time machine and you could go back in time and change anything about your upbringing, would you change anything at all?
100%. Yeah. Here's something else. Now that you said that, let me show you.
Oh, something. Now we see why you're on GQ, sir.
See what this says? Can you read the whole shirt? Oh, no, I got to stand up a little bit.
Yeah. It says this shirt saves lives.
Saves lives.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is St. Jude's. It's for cancer for kids. I've been working with that organization since I'm younger. Went to prison, came home, and I just started again donating to that. So if I could change my life, honestly, this is about little children that are sick with cancer. And so when I'm wasting my life doing negative things on the street, because I was raised in those streets, no excuses for my life. I made those choices. I never want to make excuses. Those inner city kids that are struggling just like me, I speak up for them on a regular basis. I go into Brownsville, I go into Camden, I go into neighborhoods in New York and New Jersey, and I talk to kids about don't give up on yourself like I did, and don't take a shortcut because it's going to ruin your life. Do things like this. Help these kids that need somebody to put a hand out and give $10, go to work, go to school, take a trade up, do something where you're motivating people to do positive things, right? And that's what life's about. You'll feel a lot better knowing I can't get my daughter back, but I can try to save some other families from suffering. And my daughter would want me to do this. And this is what we should be doing. I'm ashamed of my past, but I'm not my past anymore. So, you know, there's no way for me to change that. I go to church. I talk to God. I talk to my priests. And I'm not overly crazy religious. I just believe God knows what's going on. He's pointing me in the direction that he points me. And I think that if I continue in this path, you know, I'll just keep saving lives. And if it's one or if it's 10,000, whatever it may be. But if it's me and I can influence you guys to do the same for the next group of kids. And my friend Lee Whitley, he's saving lives. And, you know, we all have past, but you can do something with your present and future.
Yeah, I really love that. And I'm like, I'm getting all kinds of ideas on how we can then promote this stuff and share these links and everything like that. You're being extremely generous with us. You've been a gentleman with us and everything from the start of this, setting this up and for your time today and all that stuff. But you've kept it real with us. And I want to ask you, I don't think anybody's asked you maybe this question this way throughout an interview, but just what would be your single biggest regret in your life?
Single worst regret in my life, it has to be taking the first person's life I ever took. And then I continued on that path where it meant nothing to me when I did it. You have a lot of gangsters, they lie. They tell these kids that they were doing what I was doing. They didn't. They nowhere close. I know all these guys, most of them never did anything. And I did it on a regular basis. And just, it was a terrible decision when I made it. And you get trapped in it. You start having no regard for what you're doing. And it just takes you on a tailspin of a terrible life. It's just a terrible life of some of the things I got involved with. I learned not to let my ego control me when people are talking. Because years ago, if any of these guys talked about me the way I did, I would have picked a handful of them and started going to pick them off. And, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, I've been through therapy. I believe in therapy. I believe in, you know, what made you strong is and what made you weak. You got to control your weaknesses and you got to work at it like exercise. So I learned to overcome what I used to do and think. And I know what's the important path. The important path is to talk against that life and talk about the good stuff, not the bad. And the people that talk negative and try to instigate me back in that world, it's just because they're miserable. They hate their lives. They don't have good lives. They're insecure. They want to talk like idiots, but don't really believe what they say. And they stay in groups like that because they're weak.
It's awesome.
Just this morning, I know we could speak for each other in this particular manner. One of the Bible verses I read was when Jesus' disciples actually asked him, how many times do I forgive my brother for sinning against me? And he said, should I forgive him like seven times? And seven times was actually very generous because in the Old Testament, it was typically like three times. That was like their law. And so seven was even generous. And Jesus said, I tell you this, it's not seven times, but it's 70 times seven. And the idea is that it's unlimited. It's forgiveness. And, you know, I'm wearing a hat for those of you guys watching this. And it says second chances. And that second chance, and that's a, you know, program that John, you know, you guys have spoken on before. And we strongly, strongly believe in second and third and fourth and fifth, sixth chances because it's life. We all make mistakes. Do you want to shed some light on that program?
Yeah, I mean, the second chance program is, and again, I'll go back to President Trump. He campaigned on prison reform. And he opened his arms to me as somebody that changed their life, right? And he advocated for it. He stood by it. I'm a poster child for prison reform, actually, because if you choose the right people and you let the right people out and people that have regret, true regret, people that truly want to help other people. I've been on this path, like I said, 15 years. There's a guy in jail now, Oscar Lugo, who was a drug dealer, who did his time. He was convicted and the judge and the corruption in our system. And I'm pro-police, right? I am pro-police. I'm for defund the politicians, not the police. And you have judges and politicians that are corrupt. They gave the guy 400 years. He's not a violent offender. He should have got a 15-year sentence. He's been in almost 20. I'm advocating for his release. I'm advocating for the governor of Pennsylvania now to look at it, Fetterman, look at his case and be honest and release this guy. This is not a guy that's going to go out in the street. He's not a guy that went out and killed kids, raped kids, was a pedophile, went out and violently robbed a store and killed somebody. This is a guy who has children and grandchildren at this time, very intelligent. He's got an impeccable record in prison, and he doesn't belong there. It was corruption that put him there, and I'm working on the case. So it's very important that, you know, people understand, and they need to put groups together, people like me that understand who legitimately should be have a second chance. Not these guys that are carjacking cars and killing innocent old ladies. Those are not the people you give cash bail and let them back out. They wouldn't do crimes like that. You know, there's different individuals, and I don't think the government people or the politicians understand who they are. I think Donald Trump understands who they are because he grew up in an industry in New York. We had to deal with a lot of people, and he's very intelligent, both business-wise and politically. And he's not a typical politician. I think that's why people like myself love the guy. He's just true. And, you know, if you're a street guy, you can read through who's fake and not. So it's very important that you get guys, like I said, when you campaign for prison reform and you stand by it. And the president did that. And, you know, so you can't fault the guy for taking a picture with a guy that is out here advocating like I am against the street for kids for 15 years, close to 15 years. It's a big difference in sitting in a picture with somebody he has no clue about. And they say, well, he's a gangster and they're trying to attach him. He's a humble individual that's taking pictures every day with a million people. It's impossible to vet that. And I understand why the journalist wrote that. You know, he's on the other side of the equation. But I think you should write more about the corruption within this government, taking away the freedoms of the people. And I think you should talk about documents that were stolen by a senator, a vice president, with no power to declassify them. A big difference than what our president did. And our president didn't hide the fact. He had them bolted and secured in his house, not all over the place in the street with a son that's being accused of espionage with China and selling our country out through his laptop and Bobulinski. And there's different things in the fake Russian collusion against our president. You know, listen, I'm politically sound. I understand what we did from the hit on John F. Kennedy with the CIA possibly involved. I don't know if you guys know this stuff, but real quick, Gerald Ford was head of that Warren Commission. They put him in position as VP, wasn't voted in when they went after Spiro Agnew, and they put him in prison. And then they stepped down Richard Nixon as president with Watergate, and they placed Gerald Ford there. So, you know, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's what happened. He was never voted and became our president. Basically, history repeated itself when they got rid of General Flynn, who was a counterintelligence expert, and they went after President Trump with all these phony things. And so when people say, well, he's divisive for the country, no, he isn't. This is what the left has been doing nonstop, trying to make something of something and then trying to get him out of positions to be able to run again. And I tell people all the time, I'm an independent. I'm not a conservative. I like Bill Clinton. I just really like Donald Trump because he was for freedom, America, and the future of our country for these young kids. And that's very important for somebody that's for those things. We're a capitalist country, and we're built on our constitutions. And we're built on the heroes, our veterans, and people that stand up for our flag. If you don't want to stand up for our flag, like Brittany Griner, right? You didn't stand up for our flag. You went to Russia, and you learned the hard way. So I think at this point, she understands what the United States is. Maybe that immaturity has just resonated whether she's going to stand up for that flag all the time. Because I can't see an individual that really understands what it is now in another country when you don't have freedom to speak, what could happen to you. And she did a couple of bullshit months in prison. I did 3 years in a Brazilian concentration camp, and I did almost 2 decades in prison. So I understand what freedom means. And when I did the wrong thing, I deserve prison. When I do the right thing, you should be able to choose and pick what you want and the lifestyle you want. If it's a good lifestyle, you're not breaking the law. So I got a lot of respect for President Trump.
For sure. John, I'll have to be honest. When Matthew told me that we got you on the show, I had to search you up, of course, and check out one of your videos. And halfway through, I was kind of like, I messaged Matthew and I'm like, I'm kind of scared with this guy. He's the real deal. You know, like, why are we interviewing him? You know, he did all these things. And then I said, you know what, let me finish the video. And then that's where you started talking about what you're doing now and, you know, how much you're giving back to the community. So I just had to say, it's very inspiring what you're doing now and how you're giving back. And, you know, you've had a change of heart, right? And I just want to say it's been a pleasure having this.
Thank you.
Having this interview.
It was really nice meeting you guys too. We'll definitely stay in touch. And, you know, I got one favor, you guys too, man. You guys are young and just influence the young guys in the right direction. It's the right thing to do. And it's the thing God would want us to do, right? So you guys seem to have it right. Continue what you're doing.
Thank you, John. And we're going to close off the show, but hang on. Don't leave the call. We'll stop the recording. For those of you guys listening and watching, like, this was an honor for me. And for those of you guys listening and watching, like, subscribe, share it, leave us a comment. And until next time, God bless.
Hey, if you guys want to get in touch with me, let me just give a quick, my Instagram is John Elite, and my website is johnelite.com. So you can reach me there, comment, follow my show, Sink or Swim, on the podcast I put out every week also.
And we're going to put all those links in the description. Make sure you guys check it out.